Hi, I'm Rob Cornelis. I've jumped off a skyscraper. Welcome to episode one of Game Face Execs podcast. No, seriously, I have jumped off buildings twice, actually. It all actually began when I was when I jumped out of airplanes. You see, several years ago, I had this desire to jump out of an airplane. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling yourself. If you've ever flown commercial, you probably have. And in my case, I just wanted to have this sense of floating in the air. So I went and took a skydiving class and I jumped out of an airplane, and I've done it a couple of times. And then I wanted to graduate to jumping off a building, but not the way you might imagine. I decided that I would rappel down the side of a 42-story skyscraper. Now, actually, I did it for charity. It was for a good cause, to raise some money. But I'll never forget that experience, walking to the edge on the roof, just looking over at the concrete below and seeing these little specks we call people and thinking, oh my gosh, am I crazy to do this? But I was all roped in and they turned me around so I couldn't see. And they just said, Rob, now just put your feet up on the ledge and lean back. Are you serious? Just lean back? So that's what I did. I leaned back and I began to descend. And you know what? It was a great experience. I had a lot of fun. It was a little fearful at times, but very rewarding. So that's kind of what I'm doing here now. I've decided to start a podcast. I'm just going to just kind of lean back and see what happens. Now, I don't think I'm going to put you in danger. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to learn a lot together through Game Face Execs podcast. And we're going to talk about ways that we can all become even more successful in whatever role that we may play. Hey, do you remember years ago when we used to carry these things in our wallets? I say years ago because I don't do it anymore because everything seems to be electronic. But these are those VIP cards that we'd get from hotels or from rental car companies or from airlines where we'd frequently fly. And when we got these, we knew we had arrived. This is their way of saying thank you. Now, this took a lot of work. It took a lot of sacrifice, a lot of time. But eventually, we earned these privileges. Now, you'll notice that these companies, they were the ones that decided when we qualified. It wasn't something we could determine on our own. I feel the same way about a podcast. There's a lot of people out there who feel, hey, I've got an idea, I've got a microphone, I want to say some things. Well, in my opinion, a good podcast is one where the viewer or the listener says, you're qualified to take my time. So I value your time very seriously. I never want to waste it. I'm going to make sure that we have conversations and topics and guests that will be meaningful and have an impact on you that will bring even greater results to your life. So how are we going to do this? Well, let's start and talk about people. Because my business, Game Face, has been in business now for 25 years. You see, we help individuals create even more significance in their careers. But when I started my business, it was because of people that had brought me that far. Now, I've never really had the opportunity publicly to acknowledge and thank certain individuals that helped me get there. And I want to do that now on this launch episode of Game Face Podcast. And by that, I want to thank four particular individuals. And these people are ones that I don't see regularly, and I don't necessarily communicate with them often, but they always will have a special place in my heart. Now, these four people began in 1991. In 1991, I was working in Hollywood, California at Universal Studios. What was I doing there? Well, I used to speak fluent Japanese, and so I was hired to be a tour operator for the Japanese tourists. Now, at the time, Universal was owned by Matsushita, which is a Japanese conglomerate then. And so we got a lot of Japanese tourists and Japanese executives from Matsushita. My job was to go and interpret for them and show them around the back lot and introduce them to the stars. And it was quite an eventful and kind of a fun job. But I will tell you, I also saw it as a bit of a dead end because it really wasn't what I wanted professionally. You see, I had this itch that I just couldn't scratch and I didn't know what it was. And then I got a page from the first of the four individuals I want to talk to you about. His name was Charles. And by the way, if you don't know what a page was, those things we used to carry on our belt and it would buzz, tell us to call the individual. So that's what I did. I called Charles. I didn't know who it was. Charles, he says, as he answers the phone, how can I help you? I said, Charles, my name is Rob Cornelis. You just paged me. Oh, yes, Rob, good to hear from you. You remember we met several months ago at a party? And I vaguely remembered. And he said, Rob, the reason why I wanted to talk to you is because I'd like you to apply for a sales job for a company that I work, where I work. I thought, sales job? I want nothing to do with sales. He said, well, Rob, actually, as I recall our conversations at that gathering, I think you might have some qualities that would lend themselves very well to a sales career. Well, after some cajoling, I decided, you know what? I've got nothing to lose. I'll go interview for this position. And I did. And I will tell you, after that first interview with Charles, I was intrigued. And then he introduced me to the second person, Carl Lehr. Carl Lehr interviewed me in my second interview, and after that one, I was really interested. And after the third interview with Charles and Carl, I wanted that job. And thankfully, both Carl and Charles saw something in me, and they hired me. Where was that company? Right behind me, the LA Clippers basketball team of the National Basketball Association. Now, this is 1991. For those of you who don't follow sports, the 91 version of the Clippers was not very positive. In fact, Sports Illustrated called them the worst franchise in the history of sports. But my job was to go in and sell tickets, just smile and dial. I didn't know any better. And though I didn't really ever want to be a salesperson, I figured, well, what the heck, this will be fun. I'll see some free games. If it doesn't work out, I'll go back to Universal. Well, as it turns out, the first several weeks were very difficult. I struggled mightily, and I couldn't really figure out how to be successful. Meanwhile, my wife Allison and I are living in an apartment off Melrose Avenue. It was a complex of 32 apartment units, 31 of which were vacant when we lived there. Why? Because the building had been condemned by the city, and they were about to tear it down and build a new high-rise in its place. But the landlord felt sorry for me and Allison, because she was 8 months pregnant and I was a commission-only salesperson for the LA Clippers basketball team. Well, we stayed until we could finally move out. Why? Because I was able to learn how to sell. And when I say that, it wasn't because I came across some ploy to trick people or to deceive them into buying a product they didn't want, but rather I was able to learn a way to get people the results they desire through my product. And all of that story is told in the book, The Sales Game Changer. So after having some success with the Clippers, they promoted me. And I was really enjoying my job. I was making better money than I ever had, enjoying a position of responsibility. But I will tell you, I started to get an itch of, again, wanting to get more, because my wife and I were looking to grow our family. We wanted to move into a house, but to do so would only extend my commute further in order to find a home that we could afford. It was already an hour-long commute. And so I was struggling to decide what to do next. I didn't want to leave the Clippers. I figured if I just put my head down and work as hard as I can, something will come up. And in fact, it did. It was a phone call by individual number three. His name, Doug Piper. You see, Doug worked along with a gentleman by the name of individual number four, John Spolstra. They were business partners in a firm that they called SRO Partners. Now, this was a prominent firm in the sports industry at that time, and John Spolstra happened to be and still is a guru in sports marketing. He wrote the book on how to fill up a building. And so for John and Doug to call me was almost like a surrealistic experience. So what happened was they had heard about my work at the Clippers, and they asked me if I would be interested in interviewing for a position with their young firm, and I would be the third member of the firm. Well, I was so excited at the proposition. In fact, I was shaking when they were talking to me on the phone. They flew me up to Portland, Oregon, where they were located, and after half a day with them, I was offered the position. It didn't take long for me and Allison to decide this is what we wanted to do. And for 2 years, we worked with John and Doug and had a wonderful experience where I learned so much more about the industry of sports and about the craft of selling and marketing teams. But then I decided it was time for me to start GameFace because I wanted to produce a different service to the industry that was non-existent at the time. And so on good terms, I said goodbye to John and Doug and began GameFace in 1995. But here's the point. I could not have made that career move, and GameFace could not be what it has become, hopefully a great contributor to people's careers and livelihoods, if I had not won the trust, and if not Charles and Carl and Doug and John seen something in me that gave them a sense of hope and optimism that this guy can do something to contribute to our company. I didn't see it, but they did. And I'm forever grateful for them for trusting me and for giving me that shot. You know, Tim McGraw says in his famous song, "We should all be humble and kind." And that's what I found from Charles and Carl and Doug and John. And I hope to pass that on. And I hope all of us will. But there are three other characteristics that I have found to be universal about those people who wear their game face in whatever they do. I'd like to share with you three stories that really personify these characteristics. And the first characteristic is that of humility. Now, I experienced this, I observed it in an individual who I never expected would possess it. You see, in 2008, while living in Portland, Oregon, I got a phone call from an individual who was related to a political campaign. He was working for a gentleman who was running for president of the United States. And he called me and said, "Rob, are you free tomorrow and the next day?" Now, I'm running my company and I'm not really free, but I was intrigued. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, our candidate is coming into Portland. He's going to be spending about 24 hours there. I was wondering, would you be interested and willing in driving him around Portland to his various events and meetings?" Well, I thought this would be intriguing, right? This would be interesting. So I said, "Sure, I'd be happy to." And so I did. So they picked me because I had a Suburban, I guess. It was a black Suburban at that. And so at the appointed time, I was able to drive my Suburban out on the tarmac of the Portland International Airport. And I picked up the candidate who had just arrived in his private jet with his entourage. The candidate, Mitt Romney. Now, as you know, Mitt Romney was running for president in 2008 and later in 2012. And he had just completed his term as the governor of Massachusetts. Previous to all of that, he was also the chairman of the Salt Lake Olympic Committee, essentially saved the Salt Lake Winter Olympics because of his leadership. So it was a real privilege for me to be able to pick him up and drive him around in my car. Now, as I opened the door to my Suburban, I noticed that there was a lot of luggage on the tarmac being emptied out of the airplane. So I ran over to grab the luggage and put it in the back of my car. And I happened to grab Mitt's suitcase and his suit bag. And he put his hand on mine and said, "Oh, no, you don't need to do that. I'll take care of my own luggage." I said, "Oh, I insist, sir." He goes, no, please. I just appreciate you being here and taking care of us. So we got in the car and we began driving into downtown Portland. And all through that drive, guess what was happening? Mitt was actually talking to me. Rather than talking to all of his aides who were in the car with us on their phones and talking among themselves, he was just asking questions about me, showing interest in me. He asked me about my family, asked me about my car, asked me about my business and what we do. And I felt that I had actually picked up a friend at the airport. This continued throughout the day and into that night when I drove them to their hotel. And then I picked them up the next morning and he continued to show interest in me, asking me again about my family, asking me again about my employees and my work, talking about other topics that were of interest to both of us. And finally, after 24 hours, I returned them to the airport and I was amazed at the humility of this man who was running for the most prominent, most influential position in the entire world. Now, juxtapose that to what happened next. I immediately went from the airport to the office of a prominent Portland area business to meet with their middle management about a possible relationship with our company, GameFace. And as I arrived, they escorted me to the conference room, and I noticed, according to my watch, that the people that I was to meet with, they were late. About 5 minutes, about 10 minutes, 15 minutes passes, and still no one has entered the room. 30 minutes after our appointed time, they finally arrive, at least two of the three of them. And they mildly apologize to me for being late. They tell me how busy they are and how important their job is. And they essentially said, "So, what do you got?" And I felt as though I was an imposition. I felt as though I wasn't good enough to be in their presence. Eventually, the third person entered the room, and within 10 minutes, they had to excuse themselves because they, quote, had to get to a dental appointment. This was such a strange and disappointing experience. Again, compare it to what I had just gone through with a candidate for president of the United States. Put aside his politics and policy, that's not material right now. It's the personality of the individual, the characteristic of humility. He made me feel welcome. He made me feel that I mattered. Whereas these other people, these lower level people, if you will, they acted as though I was fortunate to be in their presence. By the way, of those three individuals, I have no idea where they are today, what they're doing. I've never heard of them since. Meanwhile, Mitt Romney eventually got the nomination to his party to run for president, and now he's a U.S. senator. Interesting example, something I think we can all learn. Doesn't matter your status, your position, your background, doesn't matter your experience or income. Treat everybody as though they're the most important person of your day. Second example, the quality is gratitude. Now, speaking of politics, some of you may know that I too dipped my toe into politics a few years later. I ran for U.S. Congress. When you run for Congress, you gain a lot of friends. You meet a lot of people, wonderful people, volunteers, contributors, people who just want to educate you on the issues. And one of those people was someone I never thought I would meet, but it turned out to be a great blessing to my life. The name of the person is Phil Knight. You probably recognize that name. He's the co-founder and emeritus chairman of Nike. So Phil turned out he wanted to support me. We had met, we had talked about the issues that were important to him, his family, his business, our community, our country, and he decided to support me and endorse me. And he turned out to be my largest contributor, not just financially, but he was also a contributor of good advice. Well, eventually I lost that race, obviously, and I felt a sense of responsibility that I needed to return to Phil and everyone else who had put forth a lot of time and effort and money on my behalf to thank them and also to hold myself accountable and report to them on the work that I thought we had done, anything that we had done wrong, where we had missteps, and also I thought where we had made progress in our campaign on important issues. So I paid the visit to Phil's office. And as his assistant, his wonderful assistant, escorted me into his office, I expected maybe a quick handshake and a pat on the back and get out of my office. Instead, I got a response and a reception I'll never forget. Phil walked around from his desk, and instead of extending his hand to me like I anticipated, he put his hands together and he bowed just like this. It was a sign of gratitude, of appreciation. I failed in my attempt, but he appreciated the attempt nevertheless. It was his way of saying, "Rob, job well done." Now, granted, like I said, I've made mistakes. Some things you wish you could do over again. But Phil, he had the presence, he had the experience, he had the wisdom to recognize someone's best effort. And that sense of gratitude from someone who is at the pinnacle of his career, the pinnacle of the industry where my career was born, he was voted the most influential person in sports that year. For him to make that gesture to me was humbling, but it was also a great lesson for me to learn that I should always show gratitude to everyone for their best effort. Now, the third characteristic I'd like to share with you is one of service. We often talk about servant leadership. Well, in Game Face Execs podcast, we're also going to spend time talking about servant selling. Now, the particular example that I'd like to share with you is of a person whose name you've never heard of before, most likely. Let me tell you what happened. Several years ago, my family, my young family at the time, I have three sons, we had a pet. His name was Brooks. We loved our Dalmatian Brooks, and we cherished him, as you can imagine a family of three young boys would. Well, on one particular year, on Easter Sunday, I had to fly from our home in Portland, Oregon, across the country, over across the pond to London, England, to visit our office that we had there. I was going to be gone for about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks. So I left that night. And after arriving in London, I remember calling my wife, Allison, to see how things were since I had departed. And she reported some very sad news. She said, Rob, not long after you left for the airport Sunday night, we got a knock on the door. And it was a policeman informing us that Brooks had been hit. Now, my three sons, who were in their pajamas, overheard this conversation, and you can imagine how devastated they were. I asked Allison, well, what did you do? How did you handle it? She said, well, the policeman gave me a few options of what to do at that moment. I didn't like any of the options, and I didn't want to leave the house, nor did I want to take our sons to where Brooks was. So I thought of one and only one alternative, and that is I called Dee Christensen. Now, Dee was our next door neighbor. Dee was an older man, but still working, and he had his own construction business. So as the story goes, I returned home from England several days later, and Dee came and knocked on our door. It's the first time I had seen him since the incident, and I wanted to thank him, obviously. And he said, Rob, do you mind if I speak to your boys? I said, please. So we all gathered together and he sat them on the couch and he said, boys, I want you to know what happened several days ago. When your mom called me and told me about Brooks, I went and retrieved him from the street and I put him in the back of my pickup. And the next morning, after covering him up over the night, through the night, the next morning I had to drive from the Portland area over Mount Hood on my way to Central Oregon. And as I was at the summit of Mount Hood, I decided that I would stop, pull off the side of the road, a little dirt road where few people would ever find me, and I decided to dig a grave for Brooks. And I buried him there, and I said a prayer. And I wanted you to know this, boys, because now, every time you look up at Mount Hood, you'll remember your pet Brooks. You see, Dee was a servant. He was a man who did things above and beyond whatever anyone would ever expect. He didn't look for recognition or reward. He simply wanted to serve other people. He is an honorable man and someone that we miss greatly since his passing a few years ago. So when I think about these three characteristics of humility, of gratitude, of service, as I say, these are the characteristics I want to bring to light in Game Face Execs podcast. These are the kinds of guests I'm going to invite, those who have demonstrated this, not only in my observation of them, but throughout their career. People that I can learn from, and I think people that you will learn from as well. I mentioned earlier that several years ago and over two different occasions in my life, I have actually resided in Japan. I love that country. One particular apartment I'll remember, it was just steps away from a Shinto shrine. And at the entrance of that shrine, there was a plaque. It read, "Let only the eager, thoughtful, and reverent enter here." And that's kind of the theme for this podcast. Now, here's what I mean. I'm only going to invite the eager to be my guests. When I say eager, I mean people who, yes, demonstrate ambition, aspiration, but not at the expense of other people. I will invite the thoughtful people, thoughtful leaders, influencers, people who are thought leaders in all kinds of industry, business, sports, entertainment, academia, etc. And I will also be inviting and asking people who have a sense of reverence to join us. Now, when I say reverence, I don't mean spirituality in this case, because you should know that the same word for reverent in Japanese is also the word for respect. These are people who respect others. These are people who respect their position. They respect their industry. They respect their competition. And yes, they respect their craft and the stewardship that they carry to it. And because you know my background is in sales, they also respect sales the way it should be done. In fact, I'd like to share with you something that an author wrote. His name is Terrence Olson. He said, "Respect is an expression of our sense of universal brotherhood or sisterhood, a testimony of our membership in the human family." So in times like this, when we need to feel more a sense of family and togetherness and unity, you're going to find messages on Game Face Execs that I think will bring us together. We'll find common ground. We'll find areas that we all aspire to become and positions that we all want to emulate, and the kind of people that are universal role models. So I thank you for joining me on this launch episode of Game Face Execs podcast. As I say, we're going to have some fantastic guests. And I'm pleased to announce that our first guest appearing next week in episode 2 is Stephen M. R. Covey, world-renowned lecturer, best-selling author of The Speed of Trust. And Stephen is going to share with all of us insights on how trust in business, in your personal life, in your social life, changes everything. It's a fantastic discussion. You're going to gain great wisdom and knowledge from a man who's traveled the world to talk about the importance of trust, how we can build it, how we can lose it, and the impact it can have for us as individuals, as companies, and organizations. So thanks again for joining me on this initial podcast. Please tell your friends, invite others to join us. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're also going to learn a lot and grow together. And I'll see you next week. Thanks.